It's a parent's almost worst nightmare, learning that one of your children is missing and cannot be found. Have you been there? Or maybe you were that child who drove your parents crazy because you turned up missing. Now, none of my children ever made it to the back of a milk carton, thank God. But all of them certainly contributed to some of my remaining gray hair. There was a time I stopped at a corner store in Buffalo for milk and bread. Against their protestation, I told them they could not come with me and had to remain in the car since I would only be there for a minute. When I got back in the car, they were out of sight and completely quiet. A game, I assumed, hiding in the back of the van. And so I decided to play along and drove the 5 minutes home. It wasn't until I reached my own driveway and called out to them and there was no response whatsoever that I realized they were gone. And I prayed to God for the 5 minutes back to that store that they had simply slipped inside while I had not been looking. On another occasion, my 6 or 7 year old son disappeared from home one Sunday afternoon. I quickly walked the neighborhood streets in every direction, concentrating on the places where he had been known to frequent with friends, but found absolutely no sign of him. My wife and I huddled quickly, considering our options. Not knowing what else to do, we called the Buffalo City Police to report a missing child. Thankfully, he walked in the door on his own just a few moments before the squad car rolled up. After he had spent the afternoon visiting a schoolmate who lives several blocks away in a not quite desirable section of the city. The next time it happened, we were living in Geneseo. And I woke up in the middle of the night to discover that one of the kids was not in his room, was nowhere in the house at all. I drove all over town that night in the dark, looking for him, paying special attention to his friends' homes, but he was nowhere to be seen. And so all I could do was to return home and sit anxiously in the dark, praying for him to come safely home on his own. Last but not least came the night one of my children was not innocently missing, but had decided to run away from home in order to hang out with a group of unsavory characters who are into drugs, alcohol, and who knows what else. Small as that town was, I found myself that night in sections of town I had never set foot in before, knocking on the doors of complete strangers, asking them where runaways were likely to gather, demanding that they contact me if they encountered my child. I was a man on a mission, a man possessed, a parent who knew the dangers that lurked for a runaway adolescent and who was determined to move heaven and hell in order to find and rescue my child. Nothing else could be more important for any parent, including God. Over and over and over again, that's the overwhelming picture that Jesus paints for us of God. That God is not in the business of handing out brownie points and gold stars and merit badges to persons who are quite capable of making it on their own. No, God is in the life-saving and party-throwing business, including for those parts of my own life and your life that are messed up, embarrassing, out of sorts, in disrepair. The stories Jesus tells are great fun to listen to, but don't spend too much time trying to figure them out and make sense of them, because you can't. And that's the point. Commending a shepherd for ignoring 99% of his responsibilities in order to go off on a wild goose chase in search of one lost stray just doesn't make good sense. Praising a housekeeper for giving up an entire day looking for one small coin, then throwing a party for all of her neighbors that surely cost more than a pretty penny, just doesn't add up. But Jesus isn't a run-of-the-mill logician or ethicist trying to get us to think better and make better decisions, where better is defined by the bottom line measurement of odds of success and profit margin. Instead, Jesus wants to introduce us to a different way of thinking and living and keeping score. God's way that defies all earthly logic and pragmatism. It is, in fact, the way of love. It is, in fact, the way of love, where the only calculus is going off the charts wild and crazy and doing whatever it takes for the well-being of the other, especially the one who is lost and alone, broken and hopeless, wandering and in danger, desperate and struggling, written off and helpless. The God you and I seek to know and worship is the God who is always, always, always seeking us and every other battered, wandering, confused soul out there. All by itself, that's good news worth cheering for and celebrating, that before we even know what's happened, God's got a rescue party outfitted and saddled up, ready to come looking for us to bring us home safely. Can you imagine? Not to chastise us, not to correct us, not to punish us, not to tell us how sinful or dumb or misguided we are, but simply to bring us home in love and in joy. Can you imagine it? Wouldn't we all be better off? And wouldn't we all be more true to the gospel if we looked around at each other on Sunday morning and saw not an assemblage of successful overachievers, but an island of misfit toys for whom nothing is too good in God's eyes? You see, if the standard is perfection, if the standard is getting my life all cleaned up and spiffed up and spruced up, I'll never qualify. I'll never be smart enough. I'll never be wise enough. I'll never be tall enough. I'll never be thin enough. I'll never be athletic enough. I'll never. But if Sunday morning is about this wild party, this wild celebration of God's misfits who have realized that God's in the business of calling us all home and paving the way for that to happen and going out to bring us in, that's worth going to church for. But if God's in the reclamation or salvage business, it's not simply about picking us up and brushing off the dirt and kissing our boo-boos and patting us on the back. It's about inviting us and helping us find and live the fullness of that we were created for. Last fall, a team of folks from this congregation visited the Church for All People in Columbus. There were a number of things that stood out for us over that weekend. But one of the first ones for me was the fact that that church actually has a motto, a set of core values that are printed on the walls in almost every room you walk into, and more importantly, are printed on the hearts of their members. So that when the pastor turned to them in the opening worship time and invited the congregation to tell us what they believed, they, without looking and without missing a beat, repeated the following words: God loves us just the way we are, and God is not finished with any of us yet. They had the two sides of the coin. That God's love is not reserved for some, but God's love is for all. And it is a perfecting love, a guiding love, a love that brings us day by day, step by step, relationship by relationship, closer to living the way we are meant to live. Over the summer, one of the books I read was a little small thin volume here that has impressed and impacted me considerably. It's called The Weight of Mercy. Author is Deb Richardson Moore, subtitled A Novice Pastor on the City Streets. Deb is a second career pastor who finds herself at the end of her seminary training unable to find a church of her own because she's Baptist, and down south, women can cook, women can teach children's Sunday school, and a few other things, but not preach in a lot of the Baptist churches. And so Deb, quite to her own amazement, finds herself agreeing to become the new head of a soup kitchen in that community, housed in a former United Methodist church. You've heard some of the story from me before, but I want to hear it again because I've now got the staff reading this book a chapter a week as part of our weekly staff meeting, talking about what are the similarities between Deb's experience and what we see right here, and what can we learn from her. Very quickly, Deb realizes that she's out of her league, coming in from the suburbs, even with a big heart, that she's now dealing with people that she has no experience and no background with, people who got their hand out for this or that constantly, people who are always looking for an edge, people who are always willing to put somebody else down in order that they might have an increase in their own standing. Over the course of the book, Deb begins to rethink what ministry is all about, and whether the simple act of providing food on a daily basis that people might make it through the next 24 hours is enough, or whether we as agents of God are called to be about the business of transformation, of helping people move beyond where they have been, to break free of that which has held them in captivity, and to begin to move into the fullness of life, even if it's inch by inch, even if it's two steps forward and one step back. I'm going to invite our outreach committee to begin reading this book this year and make that a part of their monthly gathering time. And if some of the rest of you are interested in joining in the reading and the reflecting and studying, just speak to me and we'll order more books so that we can all think together about these things. It is, in fact, the motivation for a grant that we wrote this summer to the annual conference. The conference has determined that ministry with the poor, as it is with the denomination as a whole, is a high priority for us here in Upper New York. And they invited congregations all across the state to submit proposals for new forms of ministry and for the funding that would allow that to happen. We learned this week that the proposal that Deb Virgo and I, together with Nelson and Katie, put together has in fact been approved at 100%. There's good news and bad news in that, because the bad news is, why the heck didn't we ask for more? The challenge now is to begin to work with the many volunteers we have on Friday morning in our Friday community, and with some who help out on Sunday morning, people whose lives keep them from full employment, people whose lives have been tested and broken in many different ways, people who are not simply pigeonholed and stereotyped, but persons who are children of God and ready to claim more for themselves in life by the grace of Jesus Christ. And so in the next month, with the help of this grant from our annual conference, we will begin this new extension of our ministry on Fridays. I ask that you pray for it. And that you pray for the men and women who will be part of it. And pray for those of us who will be doing our best to help guide it. It's exciting. And I can't think of anything more valuable that we can be doing. Because if we are followers of Jesus, we can't just listen to his stories. And we can't just teach them in Sunday school, and we can't just talk about them in worship on Sunday morning. We need to live them out. All the time, that we who have been found by the grace and love and goodness of God can at least do the very same finding for others, that they too may begin to experience what they thought was long gone for them. By saying to them, you too are a beloved child of God. Welcome home. Let's party. Amen.